One of the biggest abrasion points is providers not having trust in the information that's being presented in front. It isn't about necessarily money from those providers' perspective. It's about detracting from the experience they have, that limited time they have in front of their patients.
You're listening to Inside Health Tech from Apixio. Join us as we explore the intersection of healthcare, data, and technology with leading industry experts. Inside Health Tech from Apixio.
Hey folks, thanks for joining us on this episode of Inside Health Tech. I'm your host, Mark Scott, Chief Marketing Officer here at Apixio. And today I'm joined by a fellow Apixion, Brian Lee. Brian, I was wondering if you could take a few minutes to introduce yourself to the listeners, talk a little bit about your background. And I do know you at one point you transitioned from the health plan world into the technology world. And wondering if you could tell us a little bit about why you did that as well.
Well, thank you, Mark. Thanks for inviting me. And I've been in this space since the late 80s. Some would refer to me a little bit as a dinosaur. But what attracted me was the structure of the regulatory environment, making sure that we could apply our creative processes to risk adjustment. I found it fascinating to be able to help improve our members through more information. And I spent 17 years in an integrated delivery system, a few might know as Kaiser Permanente. And then I moved into the Blues plans and led their Medicare program there as well. And through that whole time, I discovered the challenges that we had in really internally developing and innovating the technology that was needed to really take us to that next level, to help our providers to a great extent, delivering both better care, but also monitoring and managing that risk adjustment experience. So what brought me into Apixio? My passion and Apixio's passion for leveraging that health information to improve our members' experience and to help drive stronger performance within our payers.
Thanks for that, Brian. And we're going to touch on a few of those topics today and utilize that experience. Why don't we just dive right in here? We've had a couple years where CMS has extended the deadlines for Medicare Advantage plans for final submission. This year, they not only extended it, largely due to COVID, they extended it just beyond this year into the next couple as well. Those extended deadlines into August for final submission. What do you think are the impacts for risk adjustment payers and providers with the CMS extension? How does it affect them?
Well, that's a great question, Mark. And I think that it was kind of unexpected. It was a very welcome announcement with CMS extending the 2020 payment submission deadline for 6 months. So they've given us 6 months beyond the January 31st date. So plans have now until August 2nd, 2021 to submit data because of the COVID-19 pandemic. That's fantastic news for the industry. However, it provides an extension where payers probably should be concentrating on really getting their complete member profile submitted. They had a number of hurdles in this past year in terms of gaining access to the providers whose offices were often closed and or gaining access to records of members that didn't have the type of visit or the intensity of visit. So really the key that we expect to kind of offset that 5% or so drop that we are experiencing in RAF scores is really to conduct, say, a second level review. Let's get in and review your second level of charts that you had in queue. Most organizations don't go after 100% of your membership or 100% of each member's record. So find that second layer of records and really go and start to retrieve those from a retrospective perspective. Continue to chase those charts. I always think of chasing on a dog, chasing a tire on the car. Let's go and get those charts. Let's go retrieve those charts from providers you don't normally pursue. Find some incentives, but make sure you create the opportunity to get records that you don't traditionally gather. You may also work with your telehealth providers, as an example, who you've not historically retrieved records from. You might start working with them to retrieve those records. And I would say last, expand the suspecting logic that you have within your mechanism to identify members that have opportunities. Go after some of those fringe cases. I always tell people, go after your ESRD population, go after your hospice population with a different perspective, because sometimes there are things that you can pick up there that'll help your RAF score overall. So three major initiatives. Go after more charts for the given member. Go after different providers that you may not have before. And go after different populations by extending your logic, if you will, for your suspecting.
So you touched on some work the providers have to do here and the responsibility on the payers as well. Do you think the CMS extension is going to hit payers and providers disproportionately, or is it just an extended timeline and it's business as usual, other than the items that you mentioned, which are great opportunities?
Well, Mark, one of the things we haven't mentioned is as much of the interoperability rules that have recently come to light and the deadline of July 7th pending for payers, making sure they have that claims data available for third-party applications so that their members can access their claims data, can access their provider network. I think that in conjunction, so interoperability in conjunction with many of these activities that are limited for being able to retrieve charts, actually is going to improve the payer's opportunities to be able to get access more of that information that they may not have in the past had ease of achieving. So I think both having a little more time to work through it, but also now having the backbone of the interoperability. Many of the EHR companies are well positioned today to help payers as well as providers receive that. I think the abrasion that we've experienced historically will be cut back because of that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's good to see the government taking action. One of the other things that we've seen changing, or we've heard a lot about in terms of change and the beginnings of change in the space, is people moving more upstream to close gaps and make sure condition capture is happening at the point of care or in the physician office, or we refer to it as prospective programs. A lot of organizations are chasing prospective programs now, looking for technologies to do it, et cetera. What are some of the current challenges, in your opinion, that payers and providers are seeing with their prospective programs? I mean, they're different on the payer provider side, but what are some of the challenges they're facing with doing this?
Well, we need to start by looking at it through the lens of the provider and the member. That's ultimately the place where care is delivered. That's our members, if you're a payer, your patients, if you're a provider, that's where it all counts. And I think that you have to look at that interaction to find out where you can augment and enhance rather than detract. And many prospective programs don't look at that. They simply are trying to close a gap. They're simply trying to a paperwork trail to ensure that their risk score is as high as possible. So if you start with that lens of the provider and the patient interaction, how do you benefit the provider? How do you change their behavior so that they are, in that very limited period of time that they are interacting, capture as much information as possible, as accurately as possible, by providing, and many of these prospective programs actually provide information at the time in which that point of care is being delivered, informing the provider of gaps which maybe need to be closed that had historically been reported, or new conditions which have come up, or suspected conditions that need to be addressed ongoing. It also provides many of those tools to document those conditions more effectively within the EHR. So you've not only captured them, you have a complete reference of them, but they're accurate. You've accurately documented them and a care plan is being put together. Some of the challenges we have is too many of these prospective programs require the provider to go outside of their workflow. Or if it's within their workflow, it's too many clicks. They call it click fatigue. Providers having to click through too many screens within their EHR, and so they're going to avoid it. That abrasion really cuts down then on the quality of the captured information. The other portion is trust. Does that provider have trust in the information that's being presented to them? Is it accurate? Are they going to be looked upon negatively if they ask their patient whether they've had a colonoscopy recently, when in fact we're the ones who referred them out for a colonoscopy? So the timeliness of the information being presented is also another big challenge, making sure that it is relevant to the time in which that provider is having the visit. The other is around the evidence that's supporting that. Is it something that happened 5 years ago, or is there a relevance in the timeliness with which that diagnosis needs to be recaptured? Or in the inferred aspect, is there concrete evidence around a laboratory or a pharmacy that is driving the science telling the provider, hey, you might want to inquire on this inferred diagnosis?
I got to believe that the physician usage drops off pretty quickly if they're just getting a bunch of false alerts or empty information that they can't act on or is not relevant or timely.
That is probably one of the biggest abrasion points, Mark, is providers not having trust in the information that's being presented in front. I would say the second is the amount of you're asking me to put in more work to get to something that doesn't necessarily benefit my patient. It isn't about necessarily money from those providers' perspective. It's about detracting from the experience they have, that limited time they have in front of their patients.
I got to believe that's continued to be a huge pain point, especially when the EHR input requirements are already taking a chunk of that patient time, that face-to-face time that they normally would have had prior to the meaningful use.
Within the COVID environment, Mark, one of the topics that's really been very well discussed lately is just the whole limited time the provider has when they're in clinic. Now they're provided with that same amount of time with the patient telephonically, visually. And you think of the challenges we have day-to-day, very familiar with the videography work, the kind of challenges you might have with some of your senior population. information. That detracts away from it. And then you're still expecting them to go through a number of questions that they would have to get the background to capture that person's profile. That can be very challenging. And then you add on top of it the need to be able to capture personal information that, as an example, hey, Mark, what do you weigh today? Am I going to trim it 10% to make myself look a little bit better? How's your blood pressure doing, Mark? I know you've done it off screen. So some of those self-reported pieces really do detract now from today's COVID pandemic experience when we're looking at videography.
Well, first, Brian, the camera adds 20 pounds, I'm told. So that's totally it. Last year, just to touch on that briefly before we move on to our next question, telehealth last year, because of COVID, saw a spike. Now, that telehealth usage has to create complexities for organizations trying to implement a prospective program, as an example, or just frankly manage their traditional risk program. How are you seeing telehealth impacting those programs, and more specifically around prospective, since we're talking about it?
When we're talking about telehealth, there's not just the member patient experience, but really it's the patient experience in general. Are they likely to be able to turn that video screen on for a Medicare recipient? That's required for the provider to be able to take, to be able to bill that encounter. So right there's a substantial barrier to getting the level of care that they need to have. And yes, I am campaigning to some extent to be able to do telephone only for our senior population. But that aside, it does create a barrier. The technology itself creates a substantial barrier. Then that puts the additional burden on that provider when that connection does occur and it's working well to ensure that self-reported information is validated, that they're able to ensure that gets into the medical record in a manner that would be consistent when it's on an in-visit setting. Again, we talked about the compressed time, the availability of information. Technology has become the provider's best friend when it comes to those telehealth visits because they can look in that longitudinal EHR. They can look in some of their tools, their prospective tools that are going to provide alerts in front of them. So they're actually able to concentrate on the system, looking in the screen, being able to talk to the patients. But those barriers are going to make it so that it's limited for which members have access to it. Do I expect telehealth to grow substantially in the next year? No, I don't. I think there's going to be a settling in, but I think that the provider acceptance of the technology that supports them, like some of the prospective programs, is certainly going to become a mainstay in how many of them interact with their patients through telehealth.
Gotcha. A little bit of a trend question. I mentioned on the outset of this question that there's a lot of organizations over the last few years talking about moving further upstream, capturing codes and closing out gaps earlier in the process, closer to the point of care. Just your gut on what's going on in the industry in our space, like how many people are moving concertedly towards an implementation of a prospective program? And do you see any differences in who's doing that? Are there any keys, similarities along what organizations are looking at prospective programs? And does it make more sense for one organization or the other?
Multi-questions there, Mark, and they're very timely. So to start off, I think that it's not a trend. This is absolutely a major shift in the way that our industry is looking at influencing the point of care. So I think that historically, we could rely on retrospective chart reviews for risk adjustment purposes, but it wasn't timely. It didn't help in that complete, accurate, and timely capture of diagnostic information to benefit the member. So as we move that stream of information prospectively, we get it available at the point of care, it's going to improve care and it's going to cut back on the overall operational inefficiencies of this retroactive work. You're prospectively getting the right things done at the right time. So as an industry, there is a huge shift. Now, which organizations are going to be first adopters and which are going to be the latter adopters? Well, the mom and pop physician practice is in rural communities is going to be hard pressed to implement the kind of relationship, the kind of artificial intelligence needed to drive that type of work. So you're going to see the integrated delivery systems that have both the payer, the providers are at risk or some form of sharing in the capitation arrangement, and they have both health plan and hospital and provider groups integrated. Those are going to be the first adopters or are the first adopters to a great extent. And then we're going to start getting into collaboratory programs between your payers and larger provider groups. So, and you were seeing that all of that happening today, and different parts of the country are adopting it faster. Those organizations within states that are heavily capitated or heavily risk-based, we're seeing that happen. We're also seeing a lot of your Medicare providers who are taking Medicare risk directly from Medicare, some of your direct programming, they're actually getting involved in it. And they're starting with some really prospective programs because they understand, get it right the first time, then it doesn't require the retro work. So the answer is, it's not a trend. This is absolutely a movement that's happening within the entire industry, and it's moving quickly. And it's starting with those organizations that are larger and mature, and then starting to move into more pockets of the payer-driven.
Gotcha. I mean, certainly a lot of administrative cost savings, reduced chart chase, timeliness, that whole black box of suspecting for a chart list, a chase list. So my next question is going to lead us in a different direction. So we've got organizations, not a trend, people are discernibly moving further upstream to the point of care. What kinds of solutions, technologies are enabling them to do that? It certainly can't be easy from a logistical standpoint to pull member data, have a nurse practitioner or a clinician or a clinical team look at it, make certain assessments, determine if there's a gap, etc. What are you seeing being developed to support the move by these organizations more prospectively in terms of their risk programs?
Going back a bit, I mentioned earlier about the suspecting for chart chase. Many organizations adopted a similar rules-based suspecting for prospective programs. And while those were effective, they did create a lot of the challenges that we have today in terms of conditioning providers to less than accurate gaps in terms of those member profiles. As we have seen technology get involved, and this is where a lot of my passion for making a difference has come in, is we're starting to use artificial intelligence. We're starting to use optical character recognition to read those faxed in medical records that historically have come in from outside of your EHR. With the interoperability rules, all of those perfect storm are converging to make it so that you can collect a longitudinal record for the member, giving them these massive machines the ability then to look at not just structured data in a rules-based, but really looking at it in terms of artificial intelligence, how they can then assess that data to be able to come up with better, more accurate projections on a member's condition.
We hear a lot in healthcare about AI. In general, we're hearing a lot about AI, artificial intelligence this, artificial intelligence that. But I wondered if you could take like 15 or 20 seconds to talk more generally about what AI means in healthcare. You also touched on unstructured text. I wonder if you could bring those two together. Why does unstructured text really matter? And how does AI help there?
We talked about the experience at the point of care where the provider is capturing what's going on with that visit. There are a lot of limitations to capturing data in a structured manner, meaning you've got a drop down, they have to put an ICD code or a CPT code. The entry of that structured, the data that's categorized into classification systems is fairly limited in their ability, the provider's ability to translate what they've done. More often than not, the provider is putting into the medical record that unstructured conversation. So they're putting it in a language that says, this is what I've done to the person. This is my observations of those conditions. That's what we call unstructured data. Those provider notes, those radiology interpretations, the things that you and I read versus a table of data that says, here is an ICD code or here is a blood pressure value. That's all very structured. Historically, we've used those structured sources of data, primarily your medical claims data, to do predictions on whether that individual has a given code that is persistent one year over the other. We used to refer to that as yo-yo, year over year, or those inferred conditions, the suspected conditions that just appear to be there because maybe we're loading some of that pharmacy data, some of the prescription drugs that they've had, which consequently may not be showing up as a diagnosis code on the medical claim. So now when we enter the world of unstructured data, those medical notes, those chart notes, then we begin to enrich the view of that member's profile because now we can read the text to be able to interpret some of the things that provider is describing versus what they've just codified in a structured data.
So related to prospective programs then, technology in this case is able to catch things that, for example, might have supporting evidence, but maybe weren't documented properly or not documented at all, or had it, you said year over year, or Linty's the other term, last year, not this year. They had diabetes last year, and this year they don't have diabetes. Why is that? But those are things that you would likely miss, right? Unless you had some sort of technology or a giant warehouse of people reading every single page of everyone's encounter notes.
Correct. I think one of the other pieces to keep in mind is how quickly technology is able to keep up with the changes that are going on within medicine. So as terminology changes, et cetera, when you have a very dynamic environment like we have with healthcare, when you have the changes of COVID hitting, our documentation sources change. The kind of notes that were described have changed. The length of visits have changed. The sciences are able to keep up with that because they're not so dependent upon the structure, but on what the physician has documented, what those notes contain. And from that, they can infer, hey, I see some social determinants of health. I see some prescription drugs. I see some laboratory results. I bring all that together and I'm able to infer what that member has for conditions and then make sure that the provider has captured those prospectively.
Great. Well, Brian, there's about 14 other topics we could break out of this one discussion. I wanted to ask, is there anything else in terms of trends at the point of care that are similar prospective that you see happening in healthcare today, especially in our space for health plans and larger provider groups?
I think one of the biggest trends that is happening right now is really understanding how to engage the member in alternative care to face-to-face visit in a provider's office. And I think there are a lot of experiments that are going on. And I think as we approach that, one of the paramount pieces for that is that members' experience is not confined to that one provider engagement, that they really need to be thinking from a longitudinal or from the member's health record perspective. That record is carried with them from provider to provider, so that as they go into these new types of experiences, we're capturing the full information. While some of it may not be deemed risk adjustable today, it ultimately will be used in that member's profile to drive their risk experience.
That's great. And I think our next conversation, we should focus on that longitudinal record. There's so much there, and that seems like a burgeoning topic for particularly health plans and large provider groups to move in that direction, to have a quantifiable record that's not only portable, but queryable, right?
Well, we just think about tracking our own vaccination records with COVID coming up. We're using Facebook now to track when we got our vaccination.
Yeah, it's a lot different from those yellow cards we would always carry around and mom would stick it in a folder somewhere.
That's yes. Right.
Well, thank you, Brian. I want to thank you and everyone listening today. And join us next time on Inside Health Tech, where we'll have more great insights from industry veterans like Brian here.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Brian.
Inside Health Tech is a production of Apixio. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To learn more about Apixio's AI analytics solutions for healthcare, visit apixio.com. Inside Health Tech from Apixio.